You got some information for us? Here's a man who made
bad news. Yeah, I got a gentleman who was beat up last night.
Right. What's your name, sir? And Carl, what happened?
Well, I was on the west side, and I was up there, and I went in the store, and I got a beer, and I went out on the tracks about 8 o'clock at night by myself, and four guys came up there to drink beers with me, and they were youngsters. And what pissed them off, I believe, is they asked me to buy beer for them, which I didn't tell you before. And I said no, and as I was walking away, two of them got up and chased me and kicked me, knocked me down and started beating me up. And I was lucky to scramble out of there and got away.
I get a note here, look at his forehead, the side of his face, up here on his forehead, here on his neck.
We're looking at the left side of your face, Carl, is it?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And again, how do you spell your last name?
Got through doing that right now.
And how did they treat you?
Pretty good.
What happened last night, though, with the police?
Last night, there was a discrepancy in reports. I did get angry last night. And
so you called the police last night?
So they instead of taking me in as a battered case or whatever, they did take me in for drunk in public.
So they didn't, did they take seriously a report that you were beaten or not at that time?
No, not at that time they didn't.
So you, I'll come to the side of it, Carl, thanks. You called the police after you've been beaten by, or how, you've been kicked, it looks like you were kicked at least one, two.
I was kicked in the ribs. Hit in the face. They gave me a fat lip, an abrasion to my skull, and an abrasion to my skull.
You called the police, and then shortly after that, or how did they happen to hear about it?
Well, I was bleeding all over the place, and I ran into a store and called the police.
What store was that?
7-Eleven.
And that was
on Mission Street.
On Mission Street.
And.
And so how soon did the police take you to arrive?
They came pretty fast.
And you know, who were the police officers who answered the call?
I have no idea.
Do you remember what they were wearing?
Oh, the kids?
Yeah.
It was dark. I couldn't even describe who they were, what they looked like. I just knew they were young. They just looked like the average young kids.
But it looked like they didn't come up initially to beat you, but then grew angry with you.
No, they went back there to drink beer.
Mm-hmm. You got away, you told the police officers what happened. How drunk were you?
I was drunk.
You were drunk?
Well, not drunk, falling drunk.
But you were bleeding profusely?
Yeah.
And the police, instead of, and what kind of conversation did you have? How many officers answered that first phone call?
Well, a unit, two.
Two male police officers?
Uh-huh.
And about what time would you estimate that was?
It was around from 7 to 8.
And this was at the 7-Eleven, more or less?
Back behind.
Behind the 7-Eleven?
Yeah,
down the street. Tracks right behind it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And
over on, like, Swift Street, that area?
Yeah. You weren't there, James, but you've taken the report?
Yeah, I was talking with a young man this morning.
Right. Now, when they arrived, what kind of conversation did you have with them?
Well, I told him I had just gotten beaten up behind the 7-Eleven, and I asked them if they're going to, like, go get them, and after that, I just got irate with them because they had turned me around and handcuffed me and threw me in the car, and that's when I got irate.
So you got irate after you'd been handcuffed?
Yeah, right.
So in other words, they declined to go after the people who had just beaten you up, instead arresting you?
Yes, they arrested me.
Do you know these police officers? Are they familiar to you?
No.
Did they indicate they knew you?
No.
Did they say anything as you attempted to get them to... do their lawful duty and take a report for assault and battery?
Since I have no idea what their procedure is.
No, but what I'm saying is, did they say anything verbally to you? As you, they said, can you deal with these? Can you arrest these kids who just beat me up? What did they say?
They didn't say nothing to me.
They had no words. They just said, turn around, put your hands on your back,
and handcuffed me and threw me in the car.
That's when I got irate. And then you said, after you got angry with them, and you said, what did you say to them?
I just got irate, told them to go, you know, I don't want to public
enemy. Fuck off, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Go to
the
hell.
Kinds of things you say when people, instead of going after the criminals, go after the victims.
Right, because what they're doing here is they're criminalizing you for being drunk, okay? Not falling down drunk, but drunk, okay? Hi, what normal people do in a bar every day, because he's near the tracks, he appears to be a homeless person. What they've done is they say, well, you're the criminal, not the people that beat you. He was bleeding profusely. This morning when he came in, you could still see the blood. He's washed up now. He's had a chance to go shave and wash. But you should have seen the blood that was all down the side of his face. And, you know, this is horrendous. Not only that, but ask the gentleman what time they released him this morning.
And what time did they release you this morning?
Yeah, that kind of pissed me off, too. They released me at 1:30 in the morning in the pouring rain.
And
yeah,
did you ask to be taken to the hospital or to Dominican at any point?
No, because I was attended by a nurse.
Okay, now what? You were at the jail. You were attended by a nurse.
Yeah.
And what was her impression? Did you have any conversation with her? Or?
No, she just attended to my wounds.
What did she do?
She just attended to my wounds. We didn't have no conversation.
Put a couple Band-Aids on his arm.
You know? You're showing me your left wrist, which has a large Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm. Large.
Yeah.
Like,
is that from last night?
Two large Band-Aids.
From last night. Look at this.
And you're showing me your right arm right below your elbow.
Bruised ribs.
Your bruised ribs as well. Have you talked to Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, about this?
Yeah, I just got through talking to her about it.
And what was his reaction to this?
To make a report.
So you just went back to the police station and made another report?
No, I just went to Ken Cole.
I just got you making a report right now.
So let me see if I understand this, Kurt. Kurt it is?
Vernon. Yeah.
Now, you went into the Homeless Services Center to let them know, like in the last hour, what had happened to you?
No, I didn't. I just went to the Homeless Center to get some bandages.
And then you talked to the head of the... Ken Cole came out to talk to you?
Yeah, then he asked me what had happened, and I told him what happened, and...
He called the police?
We called to see if the report was made, and...
Did the police come out here?
Then the police came out, and confirmation... There was a confirmated report.
And so these officers treated you somewhat differently than the original officers?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Obviously, because the head of the Homeless Services Center called them up, right?
Right.
So it wasn't like the police.
I don't want to point the finger at anybody, but I would like to say, you know, I've been in Santa Cruz for a year. I don't know any. When I first got here, I heard a bunch of stuff about watch out for the troll busters, you know, and so I just kind of shunned it on and didn't really want to believe there would be actually people out there beating up homeless people just for the fun of it, but apparently there is. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Because this is not the first time. This is the third time this has happened to me.
To you? Can you tell me about the other two times?
Well, the first time, it was on Pacific Avenue, and it was mostly just verbal assault, such as, hey, what you doing, troll? What you doing, troll? And I just shunned it on.
Your mama dropped.
And, you know, vacated, it's fat, you know, vacated. And then I did have a police officer come up to me at that first time, and an undercover police officer did say that if anybody bothered me, to I'd be right here and come to report any incidents. Mm-hmm. So
again,
that's first. That was so my first experience.
Actually, were you struck or were you just?
No, just verbal assault.
And when was this incident?
This is like last year.
Like 1998?
No. About this time last year.
About November, sometime last year. Now then the second incident was...
And the second incident is I went to take just a walk on the beach. It was during the summertime, and I was just going to walk out of the beach and check out the waves over there off the wharf. And I ran into a group of young kids, probably from 14 to 17, skateboarders. Mm-hmm. And they had chased a couple of couples off the beach already.
Homeless people or just ordinary people?
Just ordinary couples. Uh-huh. And And then I got over there next to them, and then they had surrounded me. And I could tell they'd been drinking because they already had, like, killed two 12-packs that I had already noticed.
Right.
So they'd been drinking, and they had circled me and started swinging their skates at me, throwing seaweed at me, and calling me a troll and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, well, okay, you know, let's get out of here. So I left, and as I was leaving, they was like throwing rocks and seaweed and chasing me. I got off onto the wharf, figuring that I'd be safe in the public. Mm-hmm. And they still continued their pursuit.
What time of day was this?
This is about 6 o'clock on a summer night.
Uh-huh. And so it was still light.
Yeah, and they were bluntly. Yeah, and I was leaving as every time they come next to me, I'd try to get into a public place,
uh-huh.
And they would wait outside the public place, such as the store. So I got fed up with it, and I went into. It wasn't Beach Market, but it was the next market over, the Japanese lady that runs it.
Yeah, I don't know the name of that little market.
Yeah, so I went into the little market there and had her call the police because they wouldn't leave me alone.
Right.
And that was the second incident.
Now, what did the police do when they arrived?
Now, I didn't stay around for the police to...
Calling the police drive these kids along the way, or did they continue to follow you?
You haven't called the police, though. I told them I was going to call the police. They didn't leave me alone. And then when I went into the store and called the police, they did leave.
Okay. And the police didn't make any contact with you to take a report or anything?
I didn't stay for any kind
of... And are you a man who sleeps outside?
Off and on, yeah.
And have you been hassled by police or others for doing so?
No.
Is it because you hide deeply or because you...
I pretty much conceal myself.
In the city or outside the city?
I try to change locations as much as possible. Just because of that. Because I've had, being homeless, I've had incidents where the police know where the homeless live, the police know where the homeless drink or wherever they congregate, and they will show up, so I try not to hang out in those places. So.
But you haven't received a ticket, and you've pretty much been outside for the last year.
Yeah, I haven't been hassled by the police.
But that's because you think you're pretty deep, not because the police are suddenly getting very tolerant? Or is it both?
Yeah, I've had no problems with the police. No.
Okay, other than last night, apparently.
Well,
And that was actually not Kurt, but Carl on the... he was at the Homeless Services Center when I talked to him about a week and a half ago about an instance where he was attacked by three or four youths, as you may have heard, and then when trying to file a complaint with the police, was himself arrested, taken to jail, and released into the pouring rain at 1:30 a.m. the next morning. Not to Dominican Hospital, but to the jail, apparently bleeding profusely from blows about the head. We have on the line with us, however, a man who came back from Salinas last Friday in a case where the man didn't have any head left. That was a case of Jose Hernandez. We're talking to Mike Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party investigating the shooting by police several weeks ago of Seaside man in Salinas, Jose Hernandez. Hi, Mike.
How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Well, actually, the vigil prior to that, there were probably 200 people several weeks, or about a week before that. And
a week before the Friday?
Yeah, a week or 10 days last Friday. Before that. And then, so we expected a very huge crowd at the city council meeting. As it turned out, there were probably 50 people there, and Senator... Bruce McPherson showed up not relating to that initially. However, all 50 or so people came into the room where he was speaking with the city council and other members of the community. And the daughters and the ex-wife of Joe Hernandez spoke to him, trying to increase knowledge about the need for crisis intervention teams and community response teams, and also the police review boards are necessary. McPherson, I think, fended off most of the questions.
Mike, before we go into that, let me kind of get you to briefly recap the story about this is a man who was shot more than 30 times and his face completely blown away, and he was originally called by his sister for mainly because he was threatening himself rather than other people with what turned out to be a dull knife?
Well, basically, Joe Hernandez is a veteran who became mentally ill and felt very paranoid, especially after the bombing of Kosovo, that they were coming over to bomb him. He was estranged from his wife. He lived in Seaside, she lived in Salinas, and he had gone over previously with a number of knives in his belt. So it was actually the stepdaughter that had called the non-emergency police number the first time. Two policemen showed up. Joe Hernandez was calmed down. They left without incident. The second incident, he again went over to the house, became disturbed. She again, same stepdaughter, called the non-emergency number. And by all accounts, this time they sent out the SWAT team. They also sent out the negotiators. And apparently when they got there, again, by all family accounts and what we can find out, Joe Hernandez is sitting in the bedroom playing pinochle, and his family is in the house, non-threatened and so forth. Well, apparently they treated it much like a hostage situation and extricated the family from the house, leaving him there. He became disturbed and threatened to cut himself with a knife, began setting small fires, which were put out, and there was a negotiation team that tried to have him turn himself in to them for about 7 hours. During this time, the family were trying to see him, were trying to calm him down. They weren't allowed to by the police. And they kept asking, well, are you going to harm Joe? And the answer was, no, we're here to help him. Well, after the 7 hours of negotiations, when they failed, it was then that, and I'm not sure which police agency still actually went in the house, it was a SWAT team from sheriffs or
Before you go on, Mike, yeah. Failed in the sense that...
Failed to calm him down to the point where he would...
Surrender.
Not threaten himself with a knife or discontinue starting small fires and so forth.
Now, do I understand that the relatives asked to be given access to go back into their own house to
That's
talk
correct.
To their own relative,
That's
and they
correct.
Were barred from their house by these police officers?
Yes, they said they don't allow that in this kind of situation.
I see.
And at any rate, the figure I heard were four officers who apparently were in body armor and so forth and so on. Went into the house, shots were heard, and when... Then,
how many shots?
Well, we don't know how many for sure. We believe there were about 38 shots, one of which went through a wall hitting another deputy.
Hmm.
Not seriously, he's recovering.
A number went into the floor as well?
Yes, because they literally blew Joe apart. And at last count, the coroner had said he had extracted 23 bullets from the body. However, the family has said that a number of bullets went through his body while he was on the floor and into the floor.
Mm-hmm.
When they learned of his death, they went back in. Again, we heard an account of a concussion grenade going off in the house and blowing, you know, apart.
Tactical nuclear weapons as well, perhaps?
This kind of thing. Well, at any rate, he was so badly shot up that they could not embalm him. I don't know if his family was Catholic, but I don't believe they believed in cremation, but that was exactly how Joe had to leave this world, by being cremated.
So the police saved the family the expense of the cremation, huh?
So anyway, the family at the senators, appealed to him after the group had left, and then went over to the city council meeting.
And this happened about 2 or 3 weeks after the shooting?
Yes. What was so sad, there's a number of things that are so sad. One, certainly, that we have requested through the Charles Yvonne Task Force that monies be allowed for a crisis intervention team, and thinking that would possibly be the last killing a year and a half ago. We keep getting promises of that money, but so far it hasn't shown up, and now we have this. Another very sad aspect of the case is that the stepdaughter, Tanya, feels absolutely devastated that she called the police. And I sat to her, next to her at the city council meeting, and Mel Mason from Seaside sat next to me, and we were trying to convince her that she did the right thing in trying to help her stepfather, and it was not her fault that he was killed. It was the fault of the police that he was killed. And the other very, very sad aspect of this is that the family received no condolences from any of the governmental bodies, the police, the city council, so forth and so on. And this was spoken to by a number of people, including myself, the other night.
Well, perhaps like our own city council members, Crone, Sugar, and the rest of the council, they don't want to offend their police chief in their town.
No, I don't think this was the case, because Mr. Oliveras, one of the city council members, finally erupted at the meeting and said that he was so grieved by this, and they had been told by their city attorney not to say anything to anybody, and they were trying to follow that, but they became so emotionally overwhelmed by this that apparently after, I had to leave at that point, but apparently after that, a number of other city council members voiced the same concern.
The concern and being?
The concern being that they indeed felt grief for the family. They wanted to express that grief and did so very, very much, apparently. Council members breaking into tears, so forth and so on. So I think it was just this trying to keep, what the city attorney had said.
Right. I don't mean to leave out our own city attorney and his I guess the similar kinds of situations that happen in Salinas, where the council's human instincts are curbed by city attorney's interpretations of the law. We're talking to Mike Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party, who last Friday attended a city council meeting in Salinas on the death of Jose Hernandez. That is to say, it wasn't on that at all. It was some other puff event for State Senator McPherson, but it was turned into that by the group of relatives and protesters who came into the city council meeting. Is that accurate?
Yeah, this was actually on Tuesday, the 7th.
I'm sorry, Tuesday, yeah.
But what we, I think, did accomplish by the number of speakers that spoke, by the fervor of the crowd there and so forth, I requested, when I was able to speak to the city council, that they elect a Citizens Police Review Board, and I said elect, not to be selected by the city council. It be an elected body by the people.
So they don't make the Santa Cruz mistake, huh?
And, well, or mistakes of many other cities where there's really a conflict of interest. And I do believe this is going to take a great deal of time, a great deal of effort for people to understand what their role is as a review board and so forth. My readings of the paper since then is that the city council down there has agreed seriously to start the discussions about how to form this Citizens Police Review Board. They also indicated a very, very strong desire for a crisis intervention team, which I think, certainly it's looking as though things are starting to move forward, and I would hope that Salinas would be the first city then to initiate these two bodies, and perhaps other cities in Santa Cruz County and Monterey County would follow suit.
Well, I know that, you talked about the grief and guilt that the daughter-in-law felt. I guess the same thing was felt by the
stepdaughter.
Stepdaughter?
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. The stepdaughter felt the same kind of feeling, I guess, that the Garcia relatives in San Jose felt when they called. They actually called 911 because they wanted to help a man in a similar situation who was shot by San Jose police, one of seven fatalities this year,
mm-hmm.
where San Jose police shot citizens, killed citizens, not just shot them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate this update, Mike, and I think a little later in the show we may be giving a complimentary report by Nick Whitehead, who works with Santa Cruz SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. He, too, is with you. Also, I want to suggest to people the sort of a There is a Citizens Police rah-rah board, as we call it, or review board, as they call it, meeting on Monday, coming up, next Monday at 5:30 at the City Council Chambers, for anyone who wants to go to that.
Right.
That is, of course, the body that is rolling over for the City Council's confidential at-birth investigation, if they're going to call it that, or independent investigation, but they're not calling any police officers of the events of May 22nd here
right.
in Santa Cruz.
That's what I understand.
Yeah, and that's happening on Monday. For those who are interested, tomorrow morning, Friday morning at 7:30, Citizens Police Review Board member, Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board member, Becky Blythe, will be meeting with the public from 7:30 in the morning to 8:30 at the Kelly's Bakery downtown,
mm-hmm.
for those who are interested in talking to her and urging her to do something other than roll along with the current City Council agenda. So,
yeah. I'd like to mention, too, that Joe Grossman, who's running for Sam Farr's congressional seat, was also there and really pinned McPherson down about whether he would initiate legislation supporting the training of police in academies and mental health practices and so forth, kept after McPherson until he actually had to say a weak yes. And Joe has been very, very interested. He was at the vigil. He's been, you know, very interested in this particular case and speaking out for, you know, in favor of police review boards and of the crisis intervention teams, and I think people should know that.
Maybe you can get Joe to show up at the Santa Cruz CPRB hearing and denounce this confidentiality thing that's going on. That'll be happening again Monday
mm-hmm.
at 5:30 if he's around.
You might mention that to Nick, too, because he has more contact with him.
Gotcha. Well, Mike Smith, I want to thank you very much for being on the air. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think people should be very, very concerned. I think people can call certainly their city council representatives, whether it's here in Monterey County or elsewhere, and really force the issue of having sufficient training for the police at the academy levels in dealing with mental health patients, as well as having crisis intervention teams and community release boards, I mean community police review boards, that really, they aren't at odds with the police. I think that's what the problem is. People think they're automatically out to scalp police, and that's not the case at all. They should be fair to both sides, but they certainly should have the powers of subpoenaing people and taking action when there does seem to be
I hear you, Mike. I agree with you. Of course, I've got to say, I got to go further than that. This,
right.
Our board has had the power to subpoena people for 5 years and never used it.
Well,
and the problem is they are so concerned about offending the police department and offending the city council that they don't want to do anything. And I think this, you know, this usual disclaimer that talks about how police review boards actually just weed out bad cops and are a positive thing for police departments, I mean, that's all very well and may well be true, but I think what we're concerned about is holding police accountable and deterring police violence, and that's my concern. I really feel strongly about it,
mm-hmm.
and I know that it's the temperate and reasonable thing to say that, well, we just want an objective board that seeks, you know, to improve the police department, and is something that most police departments, once they are educated, don't really object to, in fact, favor, but I got to tell you, there are virtually no effective boards in this country, and that what we need is a board with prosecutorial powers to go after bad cops, and that I'm sure your police department would object to big time, and I would say tough poo-poo on that issue. Let them object. The citizens have to have recourse. With the DAs so much in bed with the police, cannot prosecute bad cops. With that, we have this kind of huge scandal in Los Angeles years later where, you know, dozens of people are falsely imprisoned by perjured testimony from police officers, and, you know, they go on doing this again and again and again. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the police department was never adequately cleaned out after the Code Blue beatings and killings of homeless people in the early 80s. You know, we had this, you know, so-called house cleaning, but higher-ups were left in place. Officers, perhaps, who may have been culpable are still on the job. I think, you know, there needs to be a real close look at these cops instead of having the police, you know, police review authorities roll over, and I'm afraid that that's what generally happens.
Yeah, I mentioned too when I spoke to the city council, as I do on almost any time I speak before governmental bodies, that I'm a retired peace officer and I feel quite lonely out there, that
people that are in my line of work aren't up there speaking out. And I think they have to. And I think some will sooner or later, but I don't see that happening currently. The other thing I wanted to mention to your listening audience, too, is Prop 21, the Juvenile Crime Initiative. This is an absolute devastating, I think, proposition to have on the ballot as far as youth are concerned, trying to lower the age for youth to be tried as an adult to 14, opening up their files so they could be used for three strikes, three strikes issues. Just a number of things really are flawed in this particular proposition. And I went to Fred Keeley's office yesterday. He has come out publicly against Prop 21. McPherson, the staff there said that he doesn't come out on any propositions publicly, which I suppose is right. But I just urge the listening public to vote no on Proposition 21.
Well, I thank you, Mike.
Okay, I'm sure there are other people who want to speak this evening, so I thank you for the time.
Sure,
and we'll try to be listening here.
Yeah, I also want to thank you for speaking on the shoulder tap law, which is coming back to our own city council next Tuesday, December 14th.
Right.
Heroically opposed by council member Chris Crone, who I don't regard in any other respect as particularly heroic, but in this issue, certainly. And I think that, while this youth criminalization measure that you're talking about is certainly one that has to be fought. It's opposed, I think, by the entire city council. It's opposed by all our local elected representatives. It's generally opposed, I suppose, with the exception of McPherson. So I'm more concerned about those issues which are in the community now, which our own police chief is trying to pass in order to criminalize young people who are asking other people, let's say, to buy liquor, making the act of asking a crime, or in fact it's already a crime to get someone to buy you booze.
Yeah, well, we're certainly opposed to the shoulder tap law too, and speak out continually against it.
I know you do. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that, of course, was Mike Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party. We are, as usual, way behind schedule, but doing some really good interviewing. If you want to call in and comment on any of these issues, 427-3772 is the number. Also, be advised that the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom will be meeting at 7 o'clock at the Presbyterian Church tonight. That's at Melrose and Poplar Streets, to do a wrap-up on the experience of some of the WTO protesters in Seattle. And I would urge anyone going to that meeting to pay some attention to the next issue I'm going to discuss, because while I'm all for the WTO protests in Seattle, I'd love to see some of these out-of-town folks, they're of course our folks who go out of town to protest, and properly so, do a little of that protesting here in Santa Cruz around the issues that impact our poor people, namely the sleeping ban and the complete unconscionable indifference of the city council in the midst of freezing rain in the winter and increased violence against homeless people and utter lack of shelter. 20% may be able to get into shelter. The other 80% get to kiss their asses goodbye in the cold. We don't hear a word from all these good liberals doing nothing, and to many extent good activists who are out there on the streets doing other stuff. They just, let's see some lockdowns in downtown Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue, guys. Wouldn't that be nice? Because that's what is happening here in Santa Cruz. How about getting into that? I feel a little bit indignant, because it's always so fashionable, whether you're a liberal on the city council defending Nicaragua or a WTO anti-protester in Seattle, to go up there and get tear gassed. But, you don't want to shut down dear Santa Cruz, because you might, endanger, like Tom Shaver goes to jail up in Seattle. What's he doing in Santa Cruz? He was essentially rolling over for the city council back last spring. And there was no letter from SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, opposing the sleeping ban in a strong way, and when the Byers did her sellout last spring, in a way that might have made a difference. So I am really not too happy with that, and I think it's really important to bring that up at this 7 p.m. meeting, where people are patting themselves on the back over WTO, as they should, but ask them what they can do now for Santa Cruz, now that it's needed most. And that brings me to this next subject, which is the Homeless Issues Task Force on Monday voted unanimously, 10-0, to demand or to ask, I'm not sure how the word was phrased, the Santa Cruz City Council in an emergency action to suspend the sleeping and camping bans until they set up safe zones, to give them time to set up safe zones for homeless people this winter, considering A, the shelter emergency, B, the increased rise in beatings of homeless people. You heard one account, and you're going to hear more on this show on that issue. And C, the documented reality that as of mid-month, the Homeless Service Center Director Ken Cole predicts there will be no shelter, period, for any homeless people. The Winter Armory shelter will be closed. Now, legislation passed last year as a SOP by Catherine Byers and Christopher Crone and the City Council does say that tickets will be dismissed if the Winter Armory shelter is closed. That's nice, but it doesn't go to the problem of people hiding from the police, people unable to camp together in safe, well-lit places because they are afraid of getting tickets. And getting a ticket in the first place means being awoken at midnight, possibly being searched, possibly being warrant checked, possibly being told to pack up your tents and move on in the rain. It's not a pleasant situation. In case you think things have changed, remember what Carl, was it Carl? Carl or Kurt, the man we heard the interview at the beginning of this show said, at 1:30 in the morning, the jail released him into the freezing rain after he himself was victimized by people who had beaten him up, youths in this business that happened out on near the Mission Street 7-Eleven. This is happening today. This is happening this year. This is happening under the enlightened leadership of Mayor Keith Sugar. And I, perhaps I'm stepping on a few toes by being so intense and directed in my criticism. I know that in the last show I had a very productive and interesting go-around with social activist and unionist Fred Geiger, and some of his friends and local associates were not happy with the way I talked about Mayor Keith Sugar. Well, I'm not happy with the way Keith Sugar is acting, and I'm not, he is the mayor. The responsibility for these situations, unfortunately, devolves on him. And perhaps fortunately, because he can be either a voice for reason and sanity and compassion, or he can be Mr. Politico, and that apparently is what he is doing. He is sugarcoating the situation, he is schmoozing the situation, and as of two days ago, he rejected the idea of even putting the Homeless Issues Task Force's emergency unanimous resolution on the City Council agenda for next December 14th, the last council meeting of the year, the last council meeting of winter, essentially, until we get into January, because the council goes on vacation. In the studio with me now, as a perennial co-host here, or occasional co-host, actually, I have that man who's sometimes outside, sometimes inside out, Santa, actually. I think you've been doing some Santa work. James Ney. Hi, James.
Hello, Robert.
Get,
how are you?
Get closer to that mic there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see if we got you. Go ahead. Say something.
Hello, Robert.
A little louder.
Hello, Robert.
That's better. And for the last couple of days, I was very impressed with the Homeless Issues Task Force on Monday. What they did was, some of them were really fed up. They said, we have brought resolution after resolution to City Council. They won't even have it included in their packet as an information item so people can know that this is what we're telling them, as, say, the police department has its information items included in the packet. Instead, what's happening is you're getting the silence, and the only time the Homeless Issues Task Force has even been acknowledged, and they were allowed to make a quick five-minute presentation after much pressure from the chair, Linda LeMaster, and member Lucy Kinmetzer, they were given a five-minute spot with no opportunity for response either from the public or even from the City Council under Mayor Byers. So the Homeless Issues Task Force last Monday, at its last meeting of, actually they're having another meeting in December because they're only going to have, I think, limited meetings in January, they said, it's a winter crisis, it's an emergency, the council has to act. People are going to die this winter unless they do act to establish safe sleeping zones, and they have to spare homeless people from this brutal situation that we know it exists because we documented it, you know, year after year. We had a huge series of hearings last winter, and yet nothing is happening. So the Homeless Issues Task Force was clear about it. They were unanimous. These are the people, I want to remind our audience, who are appointed by the City Council. These are the activists who were, you know, drawn out of other work and told to sit down and look over the situation. They did, and they said, suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances to give time to set up safe zones, particularly in view of the escalating violence and the obvious lack of shelter and the freezing temperatures. And we've had 4 homeless deaths in the last 3 months. Keith Sugar's response yesterday was to tell Linda LeMaster, Lucy Kinmitzer, and Doug McGrath, oh, I can't bring it up because it's a political issue that I don't have the votes for. That was the response of Mayor Keith Sugar. Now, they didn't expect the Homeless Issues Task Force, they didn't expect Keith Sugar to win this vote. They felt that by asking him and getting him to put this on the agenda, he would show his commitment to educating the community around this issue and putting the rest of the city council on the spot. So they would have to, if they're not going to do this, at least confront the issues raised here by their own $10,000 funded Homeless Issues Task Force. Keith Sugar's response was, well, we can't do that, but we'll tell you what we're going to do instead. We'll get an extra late-night pickup for the Armory bus, and I might be able to put that on the agenda if you guys can go out and find the money to do it somehow. This is a man who has done nothing for the last 9 months around homeless issues. He is suddenly telling, did he tell the police department to go out and find its own money? I don't think so. He was there when the $13 million, $5 million overcost police station was unveiled, when the keys to the new police car was given to then-Mayor Catherine Byers. He wasn't there, of course, when the victims of police abuse were in the courtroom of Steve Argue, and he was sentenced to 9 months in jail. They were afraid, those council members, Crone and Sugar, of being tarred with the brush of possibly being concerned about police violence, a little too concerned. So what we have here is a situation where I am urging you out there in the public to recognize we have a shelter emergency. We have a crisis where the experts' testimony of the Homeless Issues Task Force appointed by and paid by the City Council is telling them you have to put this on the agenda to at least discuss. And Mayor Keith, is he liberal? Sugar is saying no way. We'll just have to wait a year until the next election and maybe we'll get some more votes. Is this the way to get votes? By waiting a year? By not regarding the issue as a serious one or serious enough to bring up at City Council? What do you think, James? Am I ragging on too much here?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a terrible situation down there. I mean, we have working homeless people that are being refused. Have you seen the ads in the paper begging for money by them, saying how they turn no homeless people away? What an outright lie. And they put pictures of people who are sheltered in homes in there as if they are the homeless. These two women, I know both of them personally, and they both are in force. And amazing.
You're talking about the Homeless Service Center's kind of big ad on the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
They've done it twice now.
That's Donna Murillo is the head of the chair of the board, yeah. And I guess Catherine Byers is on the board of directors.
And they claim that no homeless, right there in the ad, no homeless person is turned away. Outright lie. Outright lie. You know, I mean, every day, homeless people at work, people trying to pull themselves up by their bootstraps that have jobs, cannot get a place to sleep in this town.
Now, wait a minute, James. You're ragging. You're one of these activist radicals. What are your credentials for saying any of this stuff?
Well, you know, I'm being in the streets, talking to the people, being there, facts, figures, you know. Ken Cole is willing to sit up and say yes. I've had many a meeting with Ken Cole myself personally, and he admits, but what can he do? He's stifled by the board, Miss Byers' board, okay? Why? Now they give us this thing, a late night run to the Armory. What a joke, you know, come on. Then they get up there and they can't leave in the morning because they can't get down in time to go to work. What if a lot of these people have to go to work 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We have churches out there. Why are they not being accommodated at churches that are on bus lines that they can reach at a decent, you know, 8, 9, or 10 o'clock at night, walk in, ride the bus there, get up, very quietly dress, and go and catch the bus and go to work in the morning? What is so crazy about this idea?
These are a series of really important issues. And, of course, the issue I'm urging you out there in the audience who are concerned about the rights of homeless people and the physical needs in the middle of the winter, call the City Council at 420-5020, this is what I urge you to do, and ask to talk to any council member. You could be Keith Sugar, it could be Christopher Crone, could be Catherine Byers, could be Tim Fitzmaurice, or it could be Rotkin, Matthews, or Hernandez, and just say, I want this issue put on the December 14th City Council agenda. Now, in fact, the regular agenda has closed as of noon today, so it would have to go on as an emergency item.
Well, that's what it is.
Not only is that what it is, it's what the Homeless Issues Task Force described it as. It said, we don't care if you put it on as a regular item or an emergency item. It has to go on the agenda. So I would urge everyone listening to give a call to 420-5020, 420-5020. It's a line that's open now. It's a 24-hour line to City Council. Get into the mailbox of Christopher Crone or Keith Sugar or any of the other council members.
Or get in them all. Give them each a call.
Or give them each a call. Make a number of calls.
You know,
and say, enact.
This is a serious problem. Get off your make it your Christmas thing for a homeless person.
Right. I mean,
make the telephone call.
Right. And again, the thing to emphasize that's different from last winter and other winters is this time the very official body that was appointed at a cost of $10,000, and they're not being paid, by the way. The person that's getting paid is Don Lane, who is the staff member for this group. But the city is paying your $10,000 in tax dollars. They've come back with this resolution after 3 months of investigation. And the city council, including Keith Sugar, the most liberal and probably the best person on the city council, is saying, we won't even talk about it in public. And we're just going to let you guys sit out in the cold, face the troll busters, face the police with $54 tickets, searches, harassment, throughout the winter, make it illegal for a basic thing, the right of people to sleep, because, quote, we don't have the votes. So don't be deterred by this. It's the community that needs to take action. If the community speaks loudly enough, then these people have to respond. 420-5020 is the number to call. Now I'm going to play a brief description of another beating incident so that you'll know it's not just me fabricating this. I'm rehearsing actors on the subject as well, apparently.
The fact of it is that certain of these people, and I do believe it was the tape played at the beginning of the show. I'm sorry I missed it. But I was there. I met the gentleman.
Your voice is on the tape.
But I ran into it. It was like 7 o'clock in the morning down there, freezing cold, to shelter. And the blood and gouges were still all over his face. I mean, as he says in the tape, oh, they put a bandage on his arm. But, you know, he had numerous cuts and abrasions all over other parts of his face and arms that they didn't even clean him out.
But you're talking not about the hospital to which he should have been taken, but the jail.
No,
he was taken, dumped, and then released.
Said they were a nurse. And, you know, to not even clean out these, you know, at least wipe the blood off his, you know, he's still got blood running down his face, you know.
That was about 14 hours later, yeah.
You know,
and I'm glad
they are real. They're being beaten. I've seen them all, you know. I interact with people.
You're talking about Joe Barker, the man who was beat,
twice.
2 days before, and the man who was beaten so severely that finally the police department and the DA had to take an interest. A man, Aaron Birch, was convicted of that beating and is in jail on a sentence, actually half that, as Steve argues,
less than half,
one punch against a police officer. And it's apparently okay to smash a beer bottle right in the forehead of a homeless person, ram him in the ribs, break his ribs.
With a planter box.
Yeah. You know, but if you punch him, if you dare to touch the sacred police force, then you are history.
Yeah.
And you cannot be touched.
I'm appalled by that.
But rather than that comparison, and I want people, you know, there are some people who feel, well, and I do too, I don't think it's appropriate in almost any circumstance to go after police officers, both for elementary common sense reasons more than other reasons, but, you know, setting a model for police, it's best to try to find nonviolent solutions to problems. I wish they did. That's what I try to do. But the real situation we have here is the need of this last city council meeting of the year to hear from you out there to say, look, the Homeless Issues Task Force, the one you appointed, passed an emergency resolution unanimously. We include Peter Eberle, the executive director of the Downtown Association, for God's sake.
My boss.
Voted for this. Uh-oh.
I work for him now.
He may be history. He may be history.
No.
He himself voted to say, look, suspend sleeping and camping ordinances. This is an emergency situation until there are safe zones, or so that you can set up safe zones. Keith Sugar the next day said, I will not do that, and I will not even put it on the agenda. His mind has to be changed. The council has to be made to feel this is a real issue they cannot ignore, and they will continue to ignore it unless you give them a call. 420-5020.
You came up to me a few moments ago with some rather disquieting news about troll busting.
Yes, basically 2 nights ago, that would have been November 30th. November 30th on Tuesday night, a friend and myself were making our way to camp in the vicinity of Natural Bridges. Basically, we don't camp there, we camp elsewhere, but that's confidential to me right now. Mm-hmm. We were walking our usual route. We'd gotten off the bus a few minutes earlier, and we heard a vehicle approaching from behind us. My friend had a sudden instinct, which is really out of character for him, to jump into the bushes and hide, and I joined him, not as much out of my own instinct as much as trusting his. They pulled up very close to where we jumped out into the bushes, and it became very obvious very quickly they were looking for us.
How did you note this?
I noted it because it was odd. I just thought it odd for them to stop within about 15 feet of where we had left.
Did you hear them say anything?
Well, my friend ran. I started to run after him down a path, and this vehicle, a white pickup truck, quite large one, big wheels, very loud, old-sounding engine, pulled up a little bit further to where we actually had departed from the road, turned on a flashlight, which soon became a spotlight, and at that point I was ducking this way and that way because I didn't want to be an easy target. I didn't know who these people were or what. And we managed to escape. I soon heard them gun their engines, go and turn a corner, run back and forth in the area for a little while, and then leave.
And what area was this again?
The very end of Delaware near Schaefer.
Uh-huh.
We then heard them for about an hour traveling within the vicinity all around through the industrial areas around there. For about an hour, just seemingly.
You were hiding at this time?
Well, we could hear them pretty well, so we weren't quite in a state of hiding. We could hear pretty much the direction, the distance, and after that, they didn't really come very close to us.
Yeah, I mean, you were in your camp, or?
We were near our camp. We were just kind of, just being still. And
were there other people out in this area, or were you all alone out there?
As far as I know, myself and my friend are the only people that even heard the truck, as far as I know.
About what time of night was this?
I'm going to guess around 9 o'clock.
And did you hear any, was there any voices, any shouting?
Yes, as a matter of fact, when we took off, basically it wasn't much, when we took off running down the path and saw the spotlight behind me, I just heard someone yell, hey. It was pretty wet out. I figured they didn't want to get too wet, so they didn't come out after us. It was today that I heard a story from a friend that was a lot more alarming.
Tell me about that.
That he was in the very same area, and I will give you the details I'm sure of and not give you anything that I can't remember too well. He said he was jumped by two people, driven to the ground, had his arms twisted, was punched three times in the face, after which, and he was shown very quickly some badges, after which another police officer showed up to take him in. I understand that
the
police...
Did he get the names of any of these cops?
Not as far as I know, but I'm sure that he could get it. At any rate...
Did they say what he was charged with?
A drunk in public, which I've never known him to drink much. I know that he drinks now and then. Resisting arrest and something else, I'm not sure.
These were people in blue uniforms or plain clothes?
I understand they were in plain clothes, the initial two individuals, and when the officer showed up on the scene, he was heard by my friend to ask why he's on the ground or something to that effect, and they answered something vague like, well, that's how we found him or whatever.
So let me see if I understand that. You had another witness there watching this?
I don't know if he has witnesses beside that, but we hadn't told him about our experiences the night before. He came to me with this without knowing that we had experienced something similar the night before.
So he told you that while he was on the ground, a police officer in uniform came up and said...
And said something to the effect of, why is he on the ground or why is he in this position or whatnot.
And these two individuals identified themselves as police officers who attacked them?
Apparently they showed him badges.
And did they say what their problem was? Are they in any other kind of colloquy with him?
I understand he asked questions like what's going on and was then punched or something to the effect. Or at that point, the physical aspect of his detention was...
And you spoke to this man when?
About 3-4 hours ago.
And when did this incident supposedly happen?
Last night. He was taken to jail and released, I understand, without any charges.
And You said this guy has a first name?
Yeah, his name is Jason.
How long have you known Jason?
I've only known him kind of well for about a month and a half, but I've been an acquaintance of his for about 3 years.
Is he a homeless person?
Is he?
Yes.
Yes.
And has this happened to him before?
Not that I know of.
How long have you yourself been in town?
I've been back about 4 weeks.
And our last time you were here was how long ago?
A year and a half.
Any differences?
Well, on the surface, when I'm walking down the mall, I feel a little bit less oppression from officers, but I'm hearing a lot more stories from coroners around Santa Cruz. Presumably, I'm the one making this presumption, that's because you can get away with less on the mall.
You mean the police can get away with less?
Or? Yeah, or whoever, or anybody that would be. I got the impression from this conversation that these people and the police that came were knew each other, from what I gathered from what he said.
So you're suggesting originally the people that jumped this guy were or weren't police officers?
They at least attempted to imply that they were. They had badges. My friend said he didn't see the badges real well, didn't have time to.
Now, do you think the people that were after you the night before last were police officers or not?
I don't know, but and I didn't think so at first, but then I started to think about it when they had a very high-powered spotlight on me. Basically, about 10 minutes after they left, a police car rolled by through the same area with a spotlight looking through where we'd been. It seemed, you know, obviously that seems like something that's done in concert. It doesn't seem like much of a coincidence that they roamed those streets too with their truck for hours combing, or at least an hour, and that this officer was in a neighborhood for a while there. I know he was. I saw him twice. And that he didn't apparently find such a big pickup truck just roaming up and down the streets all that time. Unusual, he just found, you know, the presence of possibly homeless people trying to camp, something to concern him.
Did you file a report about any of this yourself?
No, I didn't, no.
Do you feel like you would be unlikely to, apprehensive perhaps, that you'd be facing
retaliation? I'm apprehensive that my need to sleep is going to get in the, you know, is going to be held against me legally.
Has anyone you know of, other than this, in the last few weeks been subjected to any kind of beatings or violence?
Since I've been back, I've heard a few stories, not someone I know personally.
And any sleeping tickets you've heard about? Or wake-ups, midnight wake-ups?
Midnight wake-ups occasionally, first alarm, yes.
On private property or public property?
On private property, yeah. I was basically told that if I didn't get up and move, and he came back in 30 minutes and I was still there, that something to the effect that I was going to be in a lot of trouble or whatever.
Where was this?
I don't know the name of the office building. It's an office building on a hill, and it's towards the clock tower end of Pacific and back a little.
Anything you want to add for the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
We should just stop giving badges to adrenaline junkies. That's all.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're talking to an anomalous individual. You say 2 days ago there was some problem yourself at 120, you heard a report of a beating?
7 o'clock at night, down on the beach, just south of the boardwalk. They were getting ready to set up camp,
right.
And he was by himself, and
wait for my car.
He got approached by about 4 or 5 individuals,
uh-huh.
You know, pretty good size, he said, and
hey, Mr. Norris, those were some bunk drugs you sold me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, like that, because right. That way,
go for it.
And they started harassing, he started to walk away, and he tripped and fell, and they commenced to kick him, and they broke some ribs and put a real deep gash in his chin.
And where was this again?
Down on the beach, you know, that little beach just by the museum, just north, just south of the boardwalk.
About what time of day?
I said about 7 o'clock at night.
And this was, today is Tuesday, what was it, Sunday you're talking?
Yeah, I guess. Hey, Robert?
Yeah?
And I said, yeah, like that, right?
Talking about a man of dark complexion with his hair drawn back, dark clothes, and you've known this man for some time?
Yeah. I believe his name was Robert, too. And
well, I know that Joe Barker and Carl were both attacked in the last 24 hours, but you're talking about something that happened about 48 hours ago.
Yeah.
So this is somebody else.
Same people. That's it. That's it.
Same people?
Because it, because say the names again?
Joe Barker and Carl.
But Joe. Joe.
Joe Barker was, Joe was attacked on Front Street. He was the guy that was attacked.
No, this is on the beach.
Yeah.
This is on the beach. So, yeah. I guess it's different.
So what more do you know about this? You got it.
I just ran into him Monday morning over here at the health nurse.
And actually, the man speaking who wishes to remain anonymous is accurate. And we do have an interview with Joe Barker. The attack did happen under the wharf, and it did happen, I think it was Sunday evening, thereabouts. Again, we'll continue listening to a little bit more of this. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize what the fellow says that we're talking to. And by the way, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the call-in number if you want to comment on anything you're hearing. These are reports from the street of beatings of homeless people, recent beatings within the last 2 or 3 weeks, actually within the last week or two. Phone number to call is 427-3772, and we're going to have another hour of this show. We go till 8 o'clock, so do give a call if you have any comments to make or anything you want to report about misconduct by police officers, or hey, good conduct by police officers, or anything around civil rights of homeless people issues. And if you are concerned about these issues and concerned that we have this still in place, this anti-homeless sleeping ban, and the last city council meeting of the year coming up, give a call to 420-5020, city council hotline, and ask Mayor Sugar and council members Crone, Byers, Fitzmaurice, Hernandez, Rotkin, and Matthews, any one of those people, to put it on the agenda, the Homeless Issues Task Force resolution, to suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances until there can be safe zones set up for people to sleep. Their own task force has recommended this, and they are ignoring it. They won't even talk about it. With your pressure at 420-5020, perhaps they will do something. Let's give you a little bit more in terms of interviews here.
A man who would like to see the sleeping ban ended, but also wants to see an end to police harassment. Do you want to say your name or not?
Yeah, my name's Chris.
And Chris, what happened to you this evening?
I was at the, it wasn't this evening, it was...